track session number 33623. Reel 4.
Basil King, reel 4. So, Basil, can you tell me about the Arctic Convoy?
Well, would you be amazed if I told you that I've never seen a convoy? I've never seen a convoy. I've seen it on television, but I've never seen it. We were always on the outer screen. That is either port or starboard side, which could be 10 miles from a convoy. You're watching and waiting. The convoy proceeds at its leisurely rate, 6 knots. We might have an aircraft carrier with us. And you just sit in your office in front of your FH4, you're doing, and just wait. And then all of a sudden, it blasts. You have your earphones on, and if a U-boat transmit, it blows your head off. It's so loud. Bang, you know. The trace goes right across the screen like that. You have to turn it down to get the bearing. Read off the bearing, pick up the phone. What was it now? I can't remember now what it was. But we used to call the fleet and tell them the bearing, and that was it. Put the phone down. Wait for the next transmission. You might not get another one. I mean, I think on the first trip we did, I never got one. I mean, it's not that. I mean, it's. On some convoys in some of the PQ-17 you see in the early part of the war, in the depths of winter, yeah, I mean, it was really rough. But, I mean, we got it. By 1943-44, we got it sussed. They weren't going to do an awful lot of damage.
Were they less of a threat by that stage,
yeah,
then?
They were less. They were beaten then. They were beaten by 1944.
So, when you got, if you did get a signal coming through on the convoys, would your ship respond, or would all ships respond to that?
All those that had got the equipment would respond, and all read off their bearings. So you can imagine, you see, you knew exactly. So they would fly off aircraft, and that was horrendous. I mean, how those chaps ever did that, I don't know. I've seen them at night. You're in convoy, and they've flown off, and they're coming back in. Well, you're coming in. It's pitch black. This bloke's going to put his plane down on that deck. Just before he arrives at the ship, lights come on. He's down, he bounces, he misses it, he goes to the side of the ship. There's a gang there, they rush forward and heave it over the side, pilot and all. They don't waste, because there's another guy behind. He can't wait. He's gone. He'd never get out. He's dead. I saw that happen time and time again.
So you were in an escort group as such, were you? That would do it. You would be a group of ships,
that's
potentially
right.
A carrier.
That's it. And it was... what to do? I was just... let me just put this back. Which... alright, we can run that out. Each convoy had a title. I did three. I did JW-59, that was in June 44, JW-61A in November 44, and JW-62 in December 1944. I did three convoys.
So can you explain to me, obviously, that there would be some difference between the one in June and the ones in November and December?
No difference.
What about conditions?
Well, it's getting colder, isn't it? So, but, I mean, I did things then. I did things then that I, makes me feel quite ill to think about it. On one occasion, it was getting dark, and the port aerial came down. So Chiefy said, it was myself and Don Gibbons, and we were on the deck looking at this aerial, and the Chiefy came up and said, that aerial's got to go back up. So he said, you, King, get it up. Never had experience of doing this sort of thing. Pair of pliers. Right. Tie the aerial onto a bit of rope. I'm going up the mast, right? Onto the yardarm. It's getting dark. The ship's pitching and tossing about. So I haul up the aerial onto the yardarm and inch my way along the yardarm. I straddle the yardarm and hold on to the stay rope to get to the end. And I'm sitting on the end, hauling this aerial up. I release the nut on top of the isolator and eventually wind it on, slam it down. I've got gloves on. I can't do it because I can't do it and put the nut on with my gloves. So I threw the gloves away. And I see the gloves fly away. I get the nut on eventually and tighten it up with the pliers. And then make my way back down along the yardarm, down the mast, down the ladder, onto the deck. And I said to old Don, I said, if that comes down again, you're going up. I'm not going up. I said, that's me. That's my first and only time I'm going up there. Because I knew when I was up there, there was only two options. If I fell, I hit the deck. If I fell in the sea, I'm dead in 5 minutes. So it was one or t'other. Which one do you want to choose? Hit the deck or go in the sea? Which is less painful?
And was there a problem with the ships, obviously, in the winter period with icing?
I never experienced iced up ships. I never experienced it. I mean, it was when we got to, we used to dock in Polyarno, well, we docked in three places, I think, Polyarno, Roster and Vianga. In Polyarno, I mean, it was frozen. I mean, it was, oh God, it was awful. I mean, you couldn't tell the difference between men and women. They were so padded up. I've never seen such a poor specimens, really. I mean, chaps fishing to try and get the smallest tiddler out of a sea that's half iced up, all slurry, you know, iced. I went ashore. We were allowed to go ashore. In point of fact, they were told us we could go to the Red Army Club. And there's nothing at Polyarno except log houses with fish hanging up, frozen fish hanging up on the eaves. And I was on the quayside. And I used to smoke then, and I always used to go ashore with 40 cigarettes. I used to have cigarettes for the Navy were exactly the same as they were for civilians in pre-war. They were tissue paper, silver paper. They were great. And I used to have, I think they were Abdullahs, and I used to smoke those. And I used to carry this 40 tin. And I went on the quayside, and there were some chaps there, and they started, a chap spoke a bit of English, and they wanted to know how many U-boats we'd sunk, you know. I mean, they were committed to it, really. And I casually got out my tin, you know, my fag, and they all crowded round, you know, and looked at me like this. Their fags were newspaper with some stuff in, which I don't think was, I don't know what it was. So I offered him a cigarette, and he went like that. I'd lost a lot. They'd cut them all. We went up to the Army Club. I don't know why we went there, because there was no food. I mean, as a chap said, you can add your wicked wife with any of those women for half a corned beef sandwich. There was nothing except it was quite opulent. They'd obviously stuff that had been, taken from grand houses at the time, and there were gorgeous chandeliers and that sort of thing. But, I mean, it was primitive. It really was.
And how long would you be sort of docked there?
I don't know. I can't remember. It might have been a couple of days. It wasn't long. But the last trip I did, that wasn't very good. It was dark when we left Poliano, and we were on the port quarter, because Sandra was on the starboard quarter, going out of Poliano into the Bering Sea, and we'd been going for some time, and a U-boat blew the bows off Cassandra, and 62 mates went to Davy Jones. In point of fact, it wasn't until about last year that I found a crew member of Cassandra was living in an old people's home down in the village, and I went down to see him because he just had his Arctic Star medal, and he was holding his medal when I went down there, and he didn't let it go. And I said, "You were on the Cassandra, were you? Weren't you?" And he was with the birds. He wasn't there. All he could do was hold his medal. So, you know, that was it. I mean, he just wasn't... I mean, I count myself lucky that at my age, you know, I can remember it all. I can write about it. I've written it all.
So when you did that, then, when the Cassandra was sunk...
She wasn't sunk.
She had
her bows blown off. But there was such a damn good crew on there that they fixed it up inside with hammocks, blankets, props, and they got it back into... In point of fact, it was repaired and it went to sea again.
Were you able to locate the U-boat that had done it at all?
Yeah, it was sunk. Eventually. That's on the record. And he was sunk. We didn't sink him, but he was sunk.
And that was the last of the Arctic convoys that you were on,
right.
Was it?
That's right, yeah.
You mentioned, obviously, earlier on about being on the Arctic convoys and the kind of conditions you were working under. Were you fairly much at action stations most of the time on an Arctic convoy?
Not all the time. No. No, not all the time. No. It was usually... If you know where the Arctic convoys, they go up Norway and they have to go round Bear Island. Well, the Nazis had an air station on Bear Island. That's when the trouble started. So before that, you would get action stations, way before that. Might be a day before or 2 days before, you go into action stations. So that's 4 hours on, 4 hours off, usually. Or if it's action stations, on all the time. And we were going round Bear Island when we were attacked. Well, I wasn't on duty, but I was on the bridge wings. And this plane, it was half dark, and I can remember it was all, the clouds were scudding about, and it was heavy sea running, and the little gunner was sitting at the... Orlikon on the bridge wings, and the guy was at the Chicago piano, you know, Bofors, you know, that goes bang, 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 bang. And this plane came out of go at us, and of course all hell let loose, or everybody started firing, the little fat seaman on the Orlikon. I was on the bridge wings, and the shells were spewing off, And I thought, oh, I'm not going to stand this side of the bridge wings. I'll get that side of the bridge wings, because if that bloke starts firing, I'm this side, not that side. But to me, it was a great adventure. You know, nothing was going to happen to me. Nothing was going to happen to our ship. It was going to happen to the others. It wasn't going to happen to us, because we're too bloody good. Fool's paradise, really. But I've seen torpedoes come at us. I've stood on the upper deck, and you can see it, and somebody sees it and says, "Hard a starboard." And you just, when you see a destroyer going full whack, 43 knots, that's going some. 34 knots, that's going some. And it springs round there, and I saw this torpedo going down the side of the ship like that. I thought, when I saw it, I thought, that bugger's going to hit me. So I was on the bridge wings, and I thought, that's it. Good night, Irene. But it wasn't.
So that would be the sort of procedure, would it, for the ship to manoeuvre, try and manoeuvre away from a torpedo?
I mean, it's jolly good captain, isn't it? Whoever's on the bridge. You know? And the lookouts. You've got no lookouts. You haven't got any dog's chance, have you?
So would the ship have a series of lookouts all on board the bridge?
Well, I don't know. That's really beyond me. I've never got involved in that, so I really don't know how the bridge operated.
So obviously you completed the three Arctic convoys. Were you still on board the ship into 1945?
No. I can't remember when it was, but the Japanese, I was in Gibraltar when the European War finished, and I remember hearing the Führer was dead.
So had you been drafted to Gibraltar itself?
Pardon?
Had you been drafted to Gibraltar itself?
No, I was on the ship. I was on the Caprice.
Oh, so you're still on board the Caprice?
Yeah, we're still with you. So we went down to Gibraltar. I can't remember why it was. That was interesting. There was on the main street, there was a place called the, kind of a club called the Excelsior. And it was a drinking bar. It had a big glass front. So I was one with Don Gibbons. I said to him, "Let's go in there and have a..." I did drink beer by then. Let's go and have a beer. So we went in there, and it was packed with Matlows, all drinking up right hearty, and as Matlows do. I mean, they don't have a pint. Let's say about a skinful, they haven't had a drink. So we sat down at this table, and we paid there. I forgot how much it was. We ripped off. It was about a shilling a bottle, I think, something like that. When you're earning 7 a penny a day, it was quite a lot of money. Anyway, we sat there drinking this beer. And the time went on, and there was a small stage. And there was a couple of chaps playing guitars and what have you. And there was this senorita came out onto the stage. The senorita came out onto the stage, you see, and started this flamenco stuff. Well, Jack's the lad, you see, he's up against the stage with his bottle of beer. He's right up against the stage, you see, and she's flicking her skirts, you see, and the skirts get higher and higher. And this little bloke, he gets that excited, you know. He hasn't seen a pair of thighs for 3 years. And he grabs this girl behind her knees like that and pushes it heads right into her crutch. Unfortunately for him, standing at the back of the bar was another Matlow who happened to be going out with this dance girl. So you can imagine what happened next. The big chap comes down and bouts three barrels of shit out of this bloke. The other bloke is not going to have it, so he's going at it. His mates say, "You can't do that." So the next thing we know is uproar. And Jack said, "There's the beer spilling," and then God knows, Jack blokes are falling over, and God knows what. I said to Don, I said, "Christ, let's get out of here." So we got out and stood out on the main street, and there was bloody hell going on inside. Next thing I know, a bloke comes flying out of this through this plate glass window out onto the road. See, there's all the glass shatters. It was like a Disney cartoon. He sort of came out through the glass. Unfortunately for him, again, there was the military police standing at the top of the road. They came belting down, and they got their truncheons out, and they'd given him three, and they're knocking the bloody bollocks off this bloke, this Matlow. And of course, and then it was all quiet and down. Being Jack as he is, within minutes, everybody's laughing, everybody's drinking up right hearty, and it's all lovely again, you know? And that's one of the joys, really, of being in the Navy. It was a comradeship, it was laughs, and I had some great laughs, I really did.
So you were with Caprice at the end of the war. Were you drafted away to another ship?
I'll come back to that. Just one little point. We spent some time at Scarpa Flow. You ever been at Scarpa Flow? Because there's nothing there at Scarpa Flow except rolling hills, no trees, millions of bloody sheep, and nothing. And you swing round a buoy. So you're allowed to go ashore. Now, we've only been at Scarpa Flow for about 300 or 400 years. And what's at Scarpa Flow? Bugger all. Except one large Nissen hut. And it's a big Nissen hut. So we go into this Nissen hut. And as we go in, we're given a bowl. White bowl. What's this for? Go up to the bar. They fill it full of beer. We can't be bothered with pints of beer. That's no good. A pint of beer is no good. I have a bowl full. So we have a bowl full of beer. And you, with your mug, you dip it in the doings and drink up right hearty. You see? And this goes on and on and on till eventually there's a bloody great fight again, as there always is. See, and blokes are skidding about, they're being sick, and they're doing, they're rolling about in the mess, and God knows what. Oh God, this is Scarpa Flow in 1944, nothing. We had to go ashore on a tender. So, we get on a tender, and we go out, and the ship's in some distance off, you see. It's dark, it's rainy. And we get up along the side of the ship and we bump up against the side of the ship, you see. Rope ladder thrown down. And up we go. It's no easy feat with a tender going up and down like this. So we had a chappy, Taffy. Can't remember what his name is now. Three sheets in the wind. Goes up the rope, starts to go up the rope. Loses it, drops down between the ship and the tender. He's gone. I got up on the upper deck and the old bishop, the signal chief, he was there. He said, well, he went happy, didn't he? Let's all have a laugh. You know? It didn't register even. It didn't even register that he'd gone. It's all a bit of a game, really. It happened to him. It's not going to happen to you or me.
Is that the attitude you have to adopt?
I think it becomes natural. You get in with a crowd of lads and it's great fun. It is great fun.
And is it a case as well that you get to meet people from different parts of the country that you may never have had the experience of meeting before?
That's
right, sort of
they're
thing.
All different. An old Don came from Birmingham, Mike came from Devon, the chaps in the mess, one came from Liverpool, And another one came from Scotland, and we had one senior chap on the mess, a chap by the name of Watts. He was Coder Watts. He did all the coding, but he was a sort of a quite old, I suppose. He must have been about, well, what we would think as old, about 38 or 40, you know. He was an old bugger. But, well, I mean, I got on with all the lads.
And is that there's a value to that experience, isn't there?
I think what it did for me, it turned me from a little boy with no confidence into a man in 4 years. If I had my time over again, I'd go in the Navy permanently, but not as a rating. This time I'd go in as commissioned.
So can I ask you then, Basil, on that one, you're on the Caprice.
Yeah.
When were you drafted away after VE Day?
As soon as we finished the runs, and that, I can't remember when it was, the three of us were drafted. The European war was over, no need for high frequency direction finding again. What we're going to do? Japanese war is on. Right, you're going on a course. All right, we're going on a course. Where are we going? Eastbourne. Where are you going? St. Bede's, the grammar school there. What are we going to be doing? You're going to learn Japanese Morse. I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't know. So I get on this course. Well, we have 26 characters in our alphabet. They have 78. They have five Zs. So you've got to set about learning all this. But you've only got a fortnight, 3 weeks to do it. Be quick. Don't mess about. Because you've got to be drafted. So you better get that under your belt quick. So you do. You plod at it all day long. See, you've got it. The next thing, I go, I'm drafted to Collingwood again, or Mercury, I can't remember. Then I'm drafted to Ceylon.